It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, and away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along, my compatriot. Mike Ward, running a couple minutes late. That's fine. He's going to join us here later on in the show. So we will be joined by him. But right now, it's our buddy, Blakely Ellis, Executive Director with CCA Alabama, joining us. And lots to talk about as we get started with an auction coming up. Didn't y'all do this last year, Blakely?
Yeah, we sure did.
It's an online auction, but I snuck a little peek. Blakely and I talked before the show started, and this is cool. So, not only items on there, but experiences, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We got you covered on both ends.
All right. So this is first of all, and then we'll kind of get into these items here. But let's talk about the mechanics of this. What does somebody need to do to be ready? You said it's on Monday when the auction runs.
That's right. It's going to start Monday the 15th at 6 o'clock. It's going to open up, and then we're going to close it the following day, Tuesday the 16th at 9 o'clock p.m. So just over 24 hours for folks to come take a look at it and get their strategy together and decide what they want to make a run at. And it's really easy to access it. You pull out your phone and you text CCA Fall 2021 to the number 76278. And that's CCA Fall 2021 to the number 76278. And that should bounce you back a link. And all you have to do is hit that link and you'll be able to view the items and start bidding. It's a really easy platform to operate and use. And if you've got any problems, you can definitely reach out to us.
Okay, yeah, and that's what I was wondering. Is this going to be online somewhere that if somebody's riding down the road right now and didn't jot it down, mm-hmm. that they can go get that info?
Yep, sure can. Sure can. We're going to be sending an email blast out to all of our members and former members that will have it. We'll have it on our social media sites and then also on our website, ccaalabama.org, under the events page.
Can you give us a little sneak preview? Can we get a little advance notice
here
of what's in it?
Yeah, sure. So these are, I don't know if I call them curated items, but they're stuff that from a lot of our corporate sponsors that we work with within the industry. So some big-time names like Sims. We've got some really neat luggage from them, some duffel bags. They've got some new tackle organization items that are new to the market. We've got some of that. You've all probably familiar by now with the company Toadfish.
Man, I love their stuff. I love that stuff. That's cool. They got some cool gear.
Yeah, they really do. And their stuff works. It's not a gimmick. Sometimes it looks like a gimmick, and I told the guy, the owner of it, I said, your stuff, when I first see it, I'm questioning it, but then when I use it, you can walk the walk.
Yeah.
And so they actually are launching some new stuff. They've got a spinning reel coming out, and we're going to be some of the first people to have that. That's the only item, actually, that we're going to offer that I can't ship right away. Those won't be in until December, the beginning of December, but everything else I've got here ready to ship. And I'm thankful for what I do have, given all the shortages and supply stuff and all that, because I was getting a little bit worried about that. But we've got the awesome stuff from Toadfish, the folding cutting board, the folding knives, the spinning reels. Let's see, sunglasses. I'm going to have 6 pairs of Costa sunglasses in the auction. We've got good stuff from AFCO and Engel. And then I'm trying not to burn through all these things. We've got, 14 different rods from TFO, including, 6 fly rods. We've got fly reels. I've got Daiwa spinning reels. And then you ready for me to talk about the trips?
I am. This is what I said, because you got stuff, but you also have experiences, because a lot of us might have, you know, a lot of tackle. We might be able to sneak a piece in or another piece as long as the wife doesn't see. But going and doing stuff with that tackle, it's about, lay this out. This is great.
Yeah, yeah. So some of the trips that we've got, probably the most popular one is going to be the guided tarpon trips, because, you know, not a lot of people – are familiar with it, but the tarpon is Alabama's official state game fish, and not many people will, there's plenty of people that may try to catch them, but there's a handful that are really good at catching them, and a couple of those people tagged tarpon for us, and actually two of them have donated trips for us. So we've got Hayden Olds and Troy Price have both.
Those guys are great, y'all, by the way. I mean, they're great. One of those guys is a personal buddy of mine, but I know both of those men are fantastic tarpon fishermen.
Yeah, yeah. So they're like, they'd be like the Nick Saban of the tarpon fishing world with their amount of championships and first place finishes, and they do a really good job, and there's nobody better that you could pick to go try to catch a tarpon. And so we'll have two of those trips up for auction. We've got, let's see, Sam Glass.
Good guy, too.
Sight fishing or a fly fishing trip. You've got Bonafide Fishing with Shane Traylor. Patrick Garmison's got a $400 gift certificate up.
What's up, Patrick, man? Man, ugly fishing. He's great.
Yeah, yeah. And then another new trip for me, a buddy of mine from Biloxi. He's involved with the CCA over there. Kyle Johnson, he's going to do this is pretty cool. So, you know, Chandelier Islands, there's not a lot of easy ways to get there. You got to either take a boat or a plane or a helicopter to get out there. So he operates out of Biloxi, and he's got a 28-foot blue wave bay boat with twin, I think, Suzuki outboards. And so what he's able to do is do a single day, a full day wade trip to the Chandelier Islands. For this trip's for four anglers, but that boat, he can add a couple extra if you wanted to add a couple anglers. But, you know, you leave Biloxi and head out to the Chandelier Islands, and you're out there, you know, within an hour if the weather cooperates, and you're able to have a truly guided experience out there, which is unique. Because a lot of times it's kind of a DIY trip where they get you out there and drop you in your skiff and kind of tell you about where to go. But, you know, you got to find the fish yourself. So this is really probably one of the best ways that I can think of to have a good experience out there if you've never been before. So that's going to be leave at sunrise and you come back at sunset. So you're there back on the same day.
I'm in. All right. So remind folks once again, they're going to get that email blast, but if they didn't, they can go to the website or whatever to get the information or to be ready for Monday?
Yeah, yeah. They can go to our website, ccaalabama.org, under the events page. And then that text the code is, you're going to text the code CCA Fall 2021 to the number 76278. And that'll bounce you back a link and get you set up, and you can start bidding away.
Man, I can't wait. Blakely, I appreciate that, and we'll have to get you back on to talk some fishing soon.
All right. Sounds good, Sean. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. There's Executive Director of CCA Alabama, Blakely Ellis. That event coming up Monday through Tuesday. How about those trips, too? I mean, the gear's cool, but how about those trips? All right, let me do this before, because my buddy and co-host here, Mike Ward, will be in a second, plus Chuck Sykes, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, is going to join us on today's show. But I want to run through this before we get to that point, because it was Veterans Day this last week, of course, on Thursday, and we talked about Veterans Day being spawned by Armistice Day, right? The 11th day of the 11th month, the 11th hour. How does this deal with hunting? How does Armistice Day deal with hunting? Well, we have a story up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. Put the outdoors on it, and you'll see one of the stories up there about the great Armistice Day storm in 1940. And I've talked about this. I guess I've stumbled upon this when I was a teenager, and it's been part of duck hunting lore for a long time. And that is what happened in the fall of 1940. And from the meateater.com, they write this. They said the fall of 1940 was a mild one in the Midwest. October brought an Indian summer with warm temperatures, no wind, and little rain. The general public loved it, but the duck hunters hated it. Every waterfowler knows it takes bad weather to kickstart the migration each autumn. Sure, there was a smattering of local teal, widgeon, and shovelers to be hunted early in the season, but most of North America's ducks were still fattening up in Canada's prairie well into the fall. That all changed on November 10th when the forecast came that held promise. Cold, snow, wind, and clouds were predicted for most of the north, and the timing couldn't have been any better or worse. With hindsight, the next day, November 11th, was Armistice Day, a widely recognized and widely celebrated holiday at the time. And we'll skip the part about Armistice Day. We've talked about that in the past. But they said in the story, the forecast did exactly what it was supposed to. Hordes of mallards, redheads, bluebills, and canvasbacks poured out of the Great Plains into the Great Lakes region. Hunters took to the water and field with the morning with high expectations that were certainly met. Many even referred to it as the best day of duck hunting they'd ever experienced. And duck hunters, we all know, right? We're looking for those snotty days, the big front coming or a big south wind, something. Small craft advisories for a lot of us duck hunters mean, hey, let's go duck hunting, right? We all know this. Well, on that day, hunters went out expecting some bad weather, you know, and hoping for it to push the ducks. A quote here in that story from Dale Engler, who was hunting on the Mississippi River in Minnesota. He wrote this in a personal account in 1963. He said, at 2 o'clock, the rain turned into wind-driven sleet and snow. And within the next 2 hours, I saw more waterfowl than I'd ever seen in my life. About that time, some hunters started to go ashore. But I thought it was just an early snowstorm and paid no attention. Besides, I was having the time of my life. End quote. Goes on here in the story to say, Engler's story isn't unique. Thousands of waterfowlers across the Midwest hunted in the afternoon as clouds of snow and clouds of ducks filled the atmosphere. Y'all can picture this, right? Big front coming. Here come all the ducks. They go on to say what was taking place at the time, though, was a collision of cold, dry polar air from Canada and warm, moist subtropical air from the Gulf of Mexico. The result was a blizzard that brought 2 feet of snow, 40 to 50 mile per hour sustained winds, and gusts of up to 80, and a 30 degree temperature swing from above freezing into the single digits. The storm was so big it halted travel, knocked out power and phone lines, devastated livestock. Side note, Thanksgiving angle here, so many domestic turkeys died in Minnesota and Iowa that the farmers were selling fresh frozen birds for 25 cents apiece. There was actually a regional shortage on Thanksgiving for turkeys because of that storm. And in the middle of that storm were duck hunters. They say unprepared duck hunters. At best, hunters were wearing cotton duck coats, canvas gloves, and hat. At worst, they were in jeans and flannels. It's hard to blame them, though. It was shirt sleeve weather, William Hull wrote in All Hell Broke Loose, as one of the books about this event. Said 50 degrees, few had given a second thought to the cold weather gear, but few could have imagined that the deadly nightmare that would besiege the upper Midwest that day. End quote. For many hunters that stayed afield beyond lunchtime, it was too late. Now, think it's 1940. Think about this, because there's a cranky outboards. I mean, I grew up with an outboard from the 60s that was a work of magic to get started. Think about this in 1940. Said cranky outboards wouldn't start, and even if they did, the waves had become too big to navigate. So think about people on those big lakes or up on the Mississippi River. It goes on to say their only option was to spend the night in the blizzard. Some hunters managed to find other hunters and consolidate resources, but many entered the night in groups of two or three. Either way, they had to get creative to fight off hypothermia. Some took turns shooting down tree branches to stoke a fire or lighting loose piles of gunpowder for brief moments of heat. Others held their dogs to stay warm or punched each other to stay awake. For those that made it to daylight, the agony was not over. The wind still blew, the temperatures hovered around zero, and boat motors were no more willing to start. Hunters had had to rely on other hunters for rescuing, but there was one waterfowling guardian angel in the sky that day, this guy Max Conrad, a pilot who dozens of hunters say they owed their lives to, who risked his own life on that Tuesday, November 12th, the next day, to fly his Piper Cub over the Mississippi River. Conrad scanned the frozen earth for the living, but often just discovered the dead. If he did find a survivor, he'd swing his plane low, cut the engine, scream out the window that help was on the way, and drop canisters filled with sandwiches, matches, whiskey, and cigarettes. After that, he'd circle above them until rescue boats could zero in on a location and reach the hunters. Conrad did this till 10 p.m. that night on the 12th and got up the next morning on the 13th and did it all again. Here are the stats, y'all. And this is the thing that has stuck with me since I was a teenager and stumbled upon this story of the Armistice Day storm and the duck hunters. Casualty estimates range from 159 to 210 region-wide. About 85 of those were duck hunters from North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois, and 66 were sailors on Lake Michigan. There's a song about that. The rest were made up of train passengers, motorists, farmers, children, and more. The massive loss of life inspired the U.S. Weather Bureau to invest more in technology and communication to ensure this would never happen again. This started a lot of things we still use now on winter storm warnings. But think about that. So casualty estimates 159 to 210. And that number has moved. I've read as low as 50, and I've read as high in this story as 85 duck hunters dying. They were stuck out overnight trying to stay warm. It got so cold so quickly, they froze to death. Think about this. And this really hits, I think it hits duck hunters more than anything, right? And I hunt lots of different stuff. But the part of me that is drawn to really rough weather is that duck hunting part of me. The rougher the weather, the better the hunt. So you can't blame those guys for doing it. But there's some of the story. You can read more about this story on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. Make sure to put the outdoors part of it on there, and you'll get the rest of that story. So check it out. The Armistice Day storm, and it may make you think twice or more than twice when it comes time to go duck hunting on one of those bumpy days out there in the Delta or elsewhere. And it is part of the history of America. All right, coming back, FM Talk 1065 Outdoors. We're going to talk about all the deer hunting coming up, the youth season, right, started this morning. Big kids start hunting next week. Mike and I will talk to Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes. We'll get him to give us a little preview when we return. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward. He's in here.
If I can't get here on time, get here just whenever.
That's right. It's fine. Listen, it's a lot of stuff going on today. Youth season started.
Yep.
The Utes. No, it's for the young kids to hunt. We're not hunting. The Utes. A lot going on. Obviously, this is prime time plus in the state of Alabama.
It is, and I'm going to miss Ute season this morning. My grandson's going on a church trip, so can't take him hunting.
You know, that's a whole side note, but I want to get into our conversation with our friend Chuck Sykes in a second. But people that schedule stuff, there's one conversation in our state, people that schedule weddings or this and that during football season. I get that.
Opening day deer season.
But the rodeo. But the ubiquitous thing is the discussion of, oh, you can't have this because it's a football weekend. Well, we're another layer deeper than that, than a football weekend. And people that – I'm not going anywhere exciting this weekend. Because they schedule things and do things when it's youth hunting season. And then they had something scheduled for the next weekend. And I said, you're crazy. I may be finding a new place to sleep, but I said, you are crazy.
So, you got another place. You can stay at my house.
I'm going to stay at your house. Or
one day.
Maybe you can go hang out with our buddy Chuck Sykes, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama. And we lost him. We've lost him. There we go. We got him back on, though. Is Chuck, are you back on?
I am back on.
Okay, because I was just discussing that people who schedule things for, like, the bigger discussion is people who schedule, like, oh, they scheduled a wedding on a football weekend. But on top of that, people that schedule stuff for Saturdays in November, they've lost their mind. I mean, I know you can only speak as a director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, an executive position, but they've lost their mind.
I can't disagree. You know, you got to set your priorities.
And I mean, it's November.
We miss events, don't we, Sean?
I do. And this is the reason I'll probably have to be sleeping in another house soon. But and we're taking away. I love this that our director is not sitting in some office right now on this weekend. He's busy prepping land to hopefully be able to get up a tree this afternoon.
That's what my goal is. If we get done with this and a few things line up, I'm going to get my bow and I'm going to set over some swamp chestnuts this afternoon.
You sent me a picture earlier in the week, and it was for a guy like me that loves to bow hunt over swamp chestnuts. It was like, it was obscene material. It was so exciting for me to see. It was you're having a hell of a nut drop there.
I tell you, I checked a bunch of my bow stands last weekend, and yes, it's going to be hard to hem them up. There's so many dropping right now. All the folks that are relying on corn to get them to them right now, I'm scared they're going to be disappointed because they are hammering those chestnuts.
Now, what part of state are you hunting in? You're hunting in
It's none of your business.
Choctaw County. And what's the combination of that gate?
Yep, that would be none of your business.
Oh, even the director's worried about me and Sean.
You're talking about...
Let me clarify. I am not worried about Sean.
Oh, okay. Well, you're a smart man. Smarter than I thought you were.
It's on a swamp chestnut, yeah, how... Looking at it, are you every other year for a good fall, every third year, or is it just tree by tree? What do you notice in y'all's woods?
Man, down here, it's typically you have a bumper crop, and then you'll have an off, and then you'll have a bumper. But, Sean, honestly, I think because we stay underwater so much and everything is fertilized so much, these trees just... It's hard for me to tell one year from the next.
Really? So it's every year has been kind of a good year?
For the last 4 or 5 years, yeah, if you want to get out of the bed and go sit up a tree and shoot a deer with a bow over a swamp chestnut, it is not that difficult to do.
And really, in the last 4 or 5 years, we have had a lot of high water. And it does fill the swamps up with water. And what a lot of people don't realize, Chuck, I mean, I realize it, you realize it, Sean does, but a lot of people don't realize how much fertilizer that puts in the woods when you have floods. And
I did not fertilize my food plots this year.
Yeah.
I was running out of time. I was running late. All I did was bush hog and took the Furminator and just basically drilled it straight in. Didn't put any fertilizer out, and honestly, you can't tell any difference between this year and last year.
Yeah, I can understand that. In that bottom land, everything grows. The oak trees grow unbelievably fast. I believe in the swamps they grow faster than the hill pines do. Now, I don't know that I'm right about that, but what I have seen on a friend of mine's property, when that water rises and over the years and it fertilizes that land, the trees just grow tremendously. Do you see that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That water is as big of a pain as it is when I'm wanting to get down here and hunt. It's saving me a little out of the pocketbook every year when I hadn't got to necessarily worry about fertilizing.
Yeah. That seesaw is a funny thing because come turkey season when it's 6 feet of water under those swamp chestnuts is tough. But you're getting the best of it now. Let's talk about what you're hearing around the state so far for how season's been. What reports are you getting in as people are – some parts of the states, we talk about it. They're in rut right now. They've been in rut.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure y'all saw that deer that Michael Perry killed up at Black Warrior. If you didn't, he killed it, I think, opening day of muzzleloader season, gross 195.
Yeah,
change.
I saw it. It was a monster.
Man, he does that every year. He is a good guy. He hunts hard. He scouts. He puts his homework in. And he and his wife kill good deer every year, so and on public land, too. So it just goes to show you that if you want to and you want to put the time in, Alabama's got some as good a deer as any place in the country.
Yeah, I mean, this is y'all public land, and like you said, this is a deer that's – what do you think he scores?
195.
195?
Yeah, 195 and some change.
Yeah, and that's a new muzzleloader state record, or will be.
That's what I have heard.
Yeah.
I can't verify that, but that is definitely what I have heard.
Yeah, if it stays with that score, it's going to be, or close to that score, it's going to be a new state record muzzleloader.
And part of this discussion, too, is the fact that different parts of our state, and we've had this conversation earlier this year, and you go back and listen to the show, and we did it last year, too, the number of zones we have is reflective of the fact that Because if you live down here, you might think there's only two peak rut dates, but there's a bunch more in the state, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why we have the different zones. And we had the zone D and E this year, or I guess last year is when it started, because those deer rut late. I mean, that deer that he killed up there at Black Warrior, those are deer that was stocked in the 40s and 50s from Michigan. And they still don't know they're not in Michigan. That's the same genetics. So, I mean, that deer probably weighed 250 and scored 195 of it. And they're in rut right now. Come hunt with me, and it's the end of January and the first couple weeks of February.
Yeah, and that's the thing that the people down here know, because we were the first, you know, with Zone B and doing all that. But now this is reflected in other areas of the state. Kind of neat. I mean, if I didn't have to, like, work and stuff, you could kind of road trip it for, what, a month and a half around and catch peaks of the rut different places in our state?
3 months.
Oh, yeah. November, December, January, and honestly, early February, you can hunt the rut if you want to plan your vacation time and go all over the state. You can do it.
I mean, if you gave me a choice, like, you could just hunt season normal, Sean, or you could hunt your whole season during the rut. I'll go with the rut. I'll go with that one. Also, I want to remind folks, too, that have, for some reason, been under a rock or a pile of hay or something. If they have not been, let's walk through game check. I know you've done this so many times with us, Chuck, but let's walk through game check. What somebody going out today with the Utes, or what somebody has to have in their hand next weekend for the big kids deer hunting, what do they need to do?
Download the app on their phones, the easiest thing. They've got everything there. They shoot a deer. They go to the app. It'll take them about 2 or 3 minutes to answer a couple of simple questions and hit submit. Whether you've got service or not, doesn't matter. It'll store it forward. When you get service, it'll register. If you don't want to do that, if you're anti-cell phone and anti-app, then all you have to do is take a piece of paper. Before you move the deer, write it down, who you are, CID number, where you kill the deer, buck and doe, the same questions that we use on the app. And then within 48 hours, you need to log it into the game check system through computer or 800 number.
You heard the director again say, we keep coming back to this too, because not my friends, but Mike's friends don't know. You said doe. You mean they have to do it if it's a doe?
Believe it or not, a deer is a deer is a deer. It doesn't have to have antlers to be considered a deer.
That's what I heard you say, and that's why I was getting ready to say. You said deer. You didn't say doe. You didn't say buck. You didn't say, nope. You said deer.
That's right.
Yep.
All right, we'll pick this conversation up when we come back. More of our conversation with the Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes, who's taken time from probably lemon shooting lanes to talk to us on this show. And I appreciate that. Be right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you here. Oh, side note as well. Waterfowl and the trout have shown up on the causeway. You know, so life is good. Life is good.
It's always good.
Hopefully in the next week or so, we'll talk to Seth Maddox and waterfowl coordinator for the state. Because you know how I – and then Mike will go to sleep as Seth and I just talk ducks for an hour. But those ducks have pushed in. I had a reason with Veterans Day and all that to be on the battleship. And so in between – this is how bad I am. In between doing news radio, I took my 15 by 56s, I think, and a glass ducks.
I bet you drove those people crazy.
I live in two different worlds, Mike Ward. Two different worlds for sure. All right, and also continue our conversation with our guest, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes, who, you know what, you can correct me. You correct me during the break, and well said. So youth season actually came in yesterday, so it's not a Saturday thing.
It did. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
All right.
Y'all were just a day off, but that ain't bad.
You're used to that with us. Also, I want to, if somebody's going out this afternoon, got the kids, and they're going to hunt, and they're going to hunt over corn, let's talk about the...
over bait.
Yeah, over bait. Any bait. That's right. The baiting stamp, the privilege here, they got to have that.
Yeah, they do. And there's still a lot of questions now. Well, my child's under 16. Well, it doesn't matter. And my daddy's over 65, and that doesn't matter. The way the legislature set that bill up, there are no exemptions. So anyone who wants to hunt over feed must buy the baiting license. It's not mandatory. You don't have to hunt over feed. But if you choose to, then you need to have that license.
Yeah,
one other thing during youth season that we get a lot of questions about, well, I'm taking my nephew hunting. Do I need to put his deer on my harvest record? No, absolutely not. If they're hunting, you can get them a CID, even if they don't have to have a license. And if they kill the deer, they're the one that killed it. You didn't kill it, so you need to let them register it.
And talk about that process. So if you got those kids, you can get online and get their number if this is the first time for them out there. So it's,
yeah,
you know, and then they're going to be able to carry that forward.
And look, if they have a hard time at a Walmart or an academy or doing it online, call the office. I've got excellent staff that will be more than happy to help someone get what they need to be legal.
And they can, and you can call them and ask them, basically tell them what you're going to go do, and then they can tell you what you need.
Absolutely. They do it every day.
So, yeah, remember that on the bait and privilege here. Got to have that. And everybody who's hunting's got to have that. You can't just have one for the property.
Yeah. And what about the hog deal, shooting hogs? Where are we at on that?
You can shoot hogs 365 days a year, but during deer season, during gun deer season, I think it was November 1 when that kicked in, because so much of the state it did come in. Then you can't shoot them at night until February the 11th when deer season goes out, and then you're ready to roll again.
Okay. So if you're shooting hogs over corn, you don't have to have a license. But if you're shooting them over corn, you're going to have it if you're deer hunting. So... am
if
I right?
If you're shooting hogs over corn right now, you still have to have it.
Okay.
You have to have a baiting stamp.
Okay.
Yeah,
you just can't hunt them at night right now.
Okay. All right. That's right. You can't hunt them at night. That's right. Till after the season.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. So those, trying to think, anything else that people need to think about, you know, doing that? Because I'm going to get here eventually to if somebody's going to drift across the state line. But within our state, bait and privilege license, of course, you know, doing your game check with your app.
Yep.
Anything else,
just
folks?
Apparently,
need to...
don't call and ask Mike any questions because he probably won't know the answer.
You're probably right.
So I'm not going to ask Mike. I'm going to ask you, Chuck. Say I got a chance to go hunt in the Mississippi Delta. Say I get one of those great places over there, and I'm gonna head over there and deer hunt, and I get lucky and kill one. What do I got to do to bring that deer back into the state?
Just debone it. Leave all the long bones, leave the skull. You can tape it out, skull plate it if you want to bring it back to get it mounted by your taxidermist. If you want to get a European mount done of it, find you a nice taxidermist over in Mississippi. Debone it out, leave the long bones and all the brain material and everything in Mississippi, and come on back home and enjoy.
So, and I have people have asked me about that again, and I, you know, kind of talked to them when I brought a buck back from Colorado. You can't, they said, well, you can't bring any bone. I said, you can bring, you call it the skull plate. Basically, if you're going to put a rack up in the barn, that
yep.
part of the
yep.
skull.
Or if you're going, I mean, the same thing a taxidermist does. You know, that's the same thing. You can tape the deer all the way out, cut the skull plate off, clean out all the brain material, and you can bring it back with the tape in one bag and your antlers in the back of the truck, and you're fine. Just do not bring the whole head back.
Well, and that's going to be a challenge for folks. who hadn't done that before. You know, it took me some learning doing that. I mean, if you're caping ahead, a lot of people are used to just caping it out, you know, for like, say, you know, midway down.
For shoulder mount.
Yeah. And then, you know, sawing the neck off and then coming with it. But it's different in this. You cut that plate off, and then you've got to take that hide off the skull.
Yep. And if you don't feel comfortable doing it, you can do what I do. You can find a taxidermist there local, and they'll be more than happy to cape it out for you for a little bit of gratitude on your part, and then you can bring it back home and have your taxidermist do it.
And most processors can do that for you, too.
They can.
Yeah. So,
I just want to make sure we're being clear. People are understanding what we're saying. So, y'all picture, hey, normally you kill a buck. Let's say you're inside Alabama, right? We're just going from one place in Alabama to another. You go ahead and cape it, and you do all that nicely. And then you reach up there and you cut the neck, and then you've got the head and the cape there. If you're coming in from out of state, Chuck, that skull and that all that, you can't have that. You have the plate and the skin from the head and attached to the cape.
Yep, you have the hide on one side and the antlers with nothing else but the antlers and that skull plate on the other, and you're good to come back.
Okay, that's why I wanted to repeat that, because if you've not done it before, it's something different you got to think about, or you know, got to find a, you know, somebody, taxidermist there who can do it and check
Absolutely.
It out that way.
Because I have never done it either. I've never caped one out.
Colorado
for
was
mounting.
My learning ground, yeah.
Yeah, but I've never done that. So it's a process. I think I could do it, but, you know, I've never done it before.
Yep. So, and by the way, there's YouTube videos to, like everything, there's YouTube videos to go teach you how to
figure it out.
Teach you how to do that.
Yeah.
Also, let's talk about going forward. What are we, you talked about that, the deer that was killed up there at Black Warrior. What are our numbers looking like in general, Chuck? Are we trending, you know, now that maybe some more reliable data coming in, are we killing about the same number of deer every year, more deer every year? Where do you see us trending on just overall population, not just big bucks?
Yeah, we're pretty level. I mean, we've averaged what we have guesstimated over the past decade is killing between 200,000 and 250,000 a year. Our game check numbers for the first time last year confirmed that. So, yeah, I think we're in good shape. I think our herd is much better now than it was because of the 3-buck limit. So if somebody wants to kill a better deer, they've got a great chance at it. But if all you want to do is shoot a half a dozen to put in the freezer, you can do that too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, what I would like to figure out is
here we go.
These 6 points and 8 points that I had last year come in my field that are about 80-point, 90-point, and 100-point.
Inch,
yeah. They're still coming in my field.
I got some of those too, Mike.
And they came in the year before last, and they came in the year before that. And they got to be at least 5 or 6, 7 years old, and they're...
Well, then, that's your fault. You should have killed him when he was 4.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's just every year I'm going to let these 8 points go, and man, next year we're going to have a good year, and they're going to be really fine ones. And next year, dadgum, those same ones came back.
Well, you know, the funny thing is.
Same size.
That's the thing. The same. So I say that if you look, because that stuff happens to me too, but you look at those bodies and they're still 2.5-year-old deer. I mean, is there.
Yeah.
Is there some bleed off? I've heard this discussed before, and I don't know if this is crazy talk or not. That if you got the issue that only so many mature bucks, 5.5, 6.5, will tolerate each other in a certain area. That when you do that, you do bleed off bucks because you are seeing those. You think you're seeing the same bucks. You're seeing other 2-year-olds,
sure,
right?
Yeah, just
like, the big ones don't show back up, and we all sit and curse our game camera, but. Do you bleed off bucks like that was born there, that gets to be 5.5, 6.5, and then they go somewhere else?
Look, it's hard to stockpile bucks on a free range condition. The property is only going to stand so many, and what Mike's seeing, some of that is just new 2-year-olds that's coming on every year that look identical to the 2-year-olds from last year.
Right.
And some of them may be some 5- and 6-year-old deer that have set up shop, and they're running the better 5- and 6-year-olds off, and those are the kind of deer that you need to take. But don't take them based on their 6-point or an 8-point. Take them based on whether they're a 200 pounds 6 point, mm-hmm. or whether they're 110 pounds 6 point.
Yeah, that is, so. There is some truth to that, right? That you get some that'll set up shop there, and kind of push other ones out.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I've got cameras out on all our places, and some of the places that I consult for as the director of the state. You know, I've got pictures of deer for 3-4 years. You know, get pictures of a unique 2-year-old and have pictures of him when he's 5 or 6. And then sometimes, just like Mike, I'm looking at cameras and I've got a really super 3-year-old that I can't wait to see what he looks like next year. And then all of a sudden, whoosh, he's gone. Never see him again. You don't know if he got run over, if somebody poached him, if he just decided to move to the next property. You just don't know. That's the chance. That's the chance you take.
But really, in reality, it was the same way inside the game fence I used to hunt. You know, we'd let these deer go, and it'd be unique deer. And then the next year, you say, well, I can't wait to see what he's going to be next year. Never see him again. I mean, you don't.
And a lot of those deer, once they turn 3, you know, you see him every day as a 2-year-old.
Uh-huh.
As a 3-year-old, you see him 3/4 of the time. As a 4-year-old, you see him maybe once or twice. And as a 5-year-old, he's a ghost.
That's right. You're right.
So they may still be there. They're just not visible like they were as a 2- or 3-year-old. Yeah. It's something, a switch flips, and it's everything changes.
Let's talk about this when we get back for the break, because I think I could attest to that. I got pictures of a deer that's been on me that I have 2 pictures of. That's it. Two pictures. All the rest of them lining up like it's senior portrait time, but 2 pictures. Coming right back. That's how it goes. We run our mouths so much, we run out of time. So we'll do it again next week. Big thank you. Thank you, Chuck Sykes.
Absolutely. Good luck on y'all's second day of youth season.
Hey, good luck this afternoon bow hunting as well. All right, we'll be back next week.
Thank you, Chuck.